to inspire for the rest of the evening.
Alright, okay, Mo'adim Simcha to everyone. I'm very impressed everyone is still awake, because I'm not, so it's great. Does anyone want to pass these around? Thank you. Okay, while the sheets are going around, I'm going to explain what this year is going to be about. I know it has a bit of a strange title, but it is about hopefully injecting a bit of meaning and relevance into a few different things we say over the course of Sukkot. So the first thing is the harachaman we add in during Birkat HaMazon. Right? It's harachaman for Ashkenazim at least. We add in the harachaman. Harachaman hu yakim lanu at Sukkot David Hanofalet. Right? That God should re-erect the fallen Sukkot of David. So that's one thing that I'm hopefully going to explain a bit about. And the other thing is what Ashkenazim say when we leave the Sukkah, the tefillah you say when you leave the Sukkah. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Sfardim actually use it, say it as a harachaman. There we go. Woo, Sfardim! during the Birkat HaMazon, so you won't feel too left out. Okay, so what do you say? We say, Yivasom milfanecha, Hashem alakenu v'kalei avateinu, Kishem kishik kiamti v'yashati b'sukkah zu. This is what we say, the tefillah that Ashkenazim say when we're leaving the sukkah. Just like I sat in this sukkah, Ken is ke l'shana haba l'ishev b'sukkah shel Leviathan. So I should merit in the next year to sit in the sukkah of the Leviathan. So hopefully we're going to discuss these two different things and hopefully connect them into an idea at the end of it. Okay, so first of all, we'll start off with the harachaman that we say, well, Ashkenazim say at least during Birkat HaMazon. Okay, where on earth does this come from? Why on earth are we asking God on Sukkot that he should put up the fallen Sukkot of David? Like, what on earth is that all about? So where's this from? It's actually based on a pasuk in Amos. Right, Amos is one of Treasa, in the end of Nevi'im Achronim. And Amos is a Navi who basically prophesizes a lot about Malchut Yisrael rather than Malchut Yehuda. He prophesizes reigning the reign in Malchut Yehuda of Yeravam ben Yoash, not like the first Yeravam when like the kingdom split, but Yeravam ben Yoash in Malchut Yisrael. And most of his prophecies are against Malchut Yisrael. And whereas in contrast, most Nevi'im, you'll see it like a big motif throughout the Nevi'im is against Avodah Zarah. Amos sort of discusses slightly Avodah Zarah, but his two main sins that he focuses on, they're not his sins, but they're the sins of Malchut Yisrael at the time, there's two main sins. The first one is Ben Adam L'Chavira. What is it about Ben Adam L'Chavira that he's so against? It's the fact that at the time of Yeravam ben Yoash, it was a great time economically for Malchut Yisrael. They were doing fantastically politically. They had great relations with the nations around them. They were doing business across like the whole part of the world. And economically, they were doing very well, which meant that there was a lot of money coming into their kingdom. Now, the problem was that hopefully when you got money, you want to try and share it out. Like, you know, give money more. So Sistaka helped the Aniyim out. The problem was in the time of Yeravam, what the people were doing was that the rich people were getting richer and the poor people were getting poorer. They were suffering as a result because the rich people were just like, oh, you know what, more money, great, more for us. And they weren't thinking about other people. So that was the first sin that Amos talks about. The second sin he talks about is the fact that it was a problem of superficiality at the time. Everyone went out, they did what they were supposed to do, but they did it because of everyone could watch externally, oh great, look what he's doing. And internally, they did not mean it at all. They had no kavana. It was lacking. All the actions were lacking the meaning. So these are the two sins that Amos comes, and most of his nevuot are against rebuking the people for these two sins. So what does he do? If we look at Amos Perek Tet, it's the first box over here on the first page. Okay, Amos Perek Tet is the last perek of Amos. And this is the climax of the punishment heading towards Malchut Yisrael and also Malchut Yehuda, because they also had some part of the sin. So the whole parak starts off, I started a little bit way through the parak, but the beginning of the parak starts off with this climax of there's a vision of God above the Mizbeach, the whole Mikdash is shaking and it collapses. and like falls to the ground, right? This is like the vision that Amos has of this crazy event happening in Israel. What happens is that the nevuah continues, and Amos describes that everyone's going to try and run away, and even the people who are running away, they're going to get chased by the sword. It's going to be crazy. There's going to be no survivors. So that's the first part of Perek Tet. So everyone's like, oops, like we should probably do something about this. So then Pasuk Zion comes along, and Amos continues explaining to them exactly what's going to happen. And although at the beginning he's like, everyone's going to die, we'll see as the Pasuk can continue that it's not completely the case. So Pasuk Zion, he says, Halok ifnei kushim atemni. God is talking to people, he's like, you are just like any other people. He's like, do not think just because you're B'nai Yisrael, you're safe. He's like, just like, he says, Halok et Yisrael heliti meretz Yisrael. You're right. I brought up Am Yisrael from Egypt, but also Pelishtim Mikaftor, I brought the Pelishtim out of this country, the Iram Mikir, I brought Iram out of this country. Don't think because you're B'nai Yisrael, you're safe. Like, I brought you out of Egypt, correct? I brought you to Israel, fantastic. But if you're not going to behave the way you should, I can easily just pick you up and take you out of Israel. Like, don't think you've got this safety ticket into Israel and that now you're here, you're safe forever. So that's Pasuk Zion. Pasuk Chet, he continues, he says, Hinei Anei Hashem Arokim B'mamlecha Chata'a V'Hishmadati Me'otam Me'al Pnei Adama Ethes Kilo Hishmad Hishmad Pnei Yaakov No Meshem. He's like, if you're going to sin, what do you deserve? You deserve punishment. So don't think you're going to get off scot-free. Like, no. If you're going to sin, you're going to be punished. Don't think because you're B'nai Yisrael, like, you're free of all punishment. It's not going to happen. Pasuk Tet, he says, Ki Hinei Anochi Mesaveh V'Haniyoti Mekol Egoyim E'B'nai Yisrael Kasha Yinog V'Kvara V'lo Yipol Sro Ares. He says, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to pick you up. I'm going to scatter you throughout all the other nations. And the mashal he uses at the end is a back varak. Varak is a sieve. So he uses this analogy of a sieve and how, like, he says a rock isn't going to be able to fall through the sieve. So you can, there's a number of ways of explaining this mashal, but one of them is that you're going to be shaken above all the other nations, but you're not really going to be able to settle anywhere. You're just going to be spread out, scattered, like this is exile. The other explanation is that what happens in the sieve, some things fall out of the, like the small things can fall out of the bottom, right? And then the big things get stuck. So that's just so too, like when you wave the sieve, when God waves the sieve of Am Yisrael across the nations, the Rishayim are going to fall out amongst the other nations, and the Tzaddikim are going to stay. So the Tzaddikim will stay in Israel, but the Rishayim will fall out and land plonk in like the middle of like who knows where, just not in Israel. So that's Pasuk Yud. Was that? No, so that's Pasuk Tet. So Pasuk Yud comes along, he says, Becherav Yamutu, Kol Chatei Ami. He's like, anyone who sins, you're going to die. By the sword, the soul's going to come and get you. And he says, Ha'omrim lo tigash v'tikdim v'adeinu hara. Who's the sword going to come after? It's going to come after the people who were like, oh, you know, this is never going to happen. Like, everyone's talking about this, like, you know, like the times of Noah, right? Everyone's talking about this big flood happening, but nah, never going to happen. Same here, like, people are talking about, like, the Beit HaMikdash being destroyed. And I was like, yeah, right, like, that's going to happen. And he's like, no, if that's your attitude, like, you've got to change the way you're acting. Right, so this is where it builds up. Pasuk Yud Aleph, this is where we find the source of where we say our Harachman. Bayomahu, on that day, after all this punishment has come to us, what's going to happen? Akim et Sukkah David Hanofala. God is going to lift up the fallen Sukkah of David. We'll come back to that in a minute. He's like, I'm going to fix everything that went wrong. All those, God's going to come along. All the walls that fall down, God's going to put them back up. All the breaches, wherever they are, God's going to fill them in. God's going to make Malchut Beit David perfect again. All the cities that were destroyed, God's going to rebuild them. That's all involved in this idea of Akim et Sukkah David Hanofala, that God is going to raise up the Sukkah of David that has fallen. Okay, so then the Pesukim continue, that we're going to, at this point, Am Yisrael, we're going to take over Edom and all the surrounding countries, neighboring countries of Israel, and at the end, the last three Pesukim of, like, the whole Sefer, they're, like, really beautiful. They talk about this idyllic future of bountiful crops and how all the destroyed cities are going to be rebuilt and we're never again going to be exiled from the land. So I just left it in this as a nice little extra because it's nice. Okay, so what's this whole idea of a Sukkah? Why is this whole idea of Malchut Beit David described as a sukkah? Because that's essentially what we're saying here. Amos is talking about on that day, once we've had all this punishment that we can have, on that day, we're going to see the restoration of Malchut Beit David. So why on earth describe it as a sukkah, right? Like, It's a bit odd. So if you look at the Radak says, it says, B'yom ha-Gu'ula. First of all, he says, when is this going to happen? It's going to be at the day of Gu'ula. What's going to happen? He says, why is it called a sukkah? Why is Machal Beit David called a sukkah? Why not describe it like a lighthouse, right? Lighthouse giving light to the world, or a tower, something strong. Why on earth would you describe it like a sukkah? So he says, the his ha-sukkah al derech mashal, right? It's not actually called, it's not actually a sukkah, Machal Beit David, but he said it's a mashal. To what? Ki hi sochechet al ha'am. Right, he uses the root is sochecha, the sukkah, al ha'am, meaning that Machot Beit David sort of covers and protects Am Yisrael. Which makes sense, right? Machot Beit David, if you have one kingdom and one king and one dynasty coming down, the whole nation is entered into that protection, as it were. Yeah, of course, they have the responsibility to that kingdom, but at the same time, they have this protection. Machot Beit David will cover them and protect them. Like, we are under that leadership. So that's what the Radak says. But I want to bring the Maharal, because I think the Maharal is really beautiful. He really explains like the idea of a sukkah. So the Maharal Netzach Yisrael, he talks about two ideas. Why would Machot Beit David be described as a sukkah? He has two different ideas. So number one, he says, Dash, Nikra Machot Beit David sukkah, ki kol Machot Nikra Bayit. So we'll start off, why is Machot Beit David called a sukkah? So if you look at every other kingdom, how are they described? As a bayit. What's a bayit? A house, exactly. Every other malchut is described as a house. Why? Lefi shadavah shehu mitziyut chazak ba'olam nikra bayit shehu binyan kavua. Anything that's strong in this world is described as a house, which makes sense. A house is something that's fixed, that's permanent, right? So he says every other kingdom is described, they're strong, they're described as a house. And then he says, ulufichach kara machot Beit David sukkah. But no, Machot Beit David is called a sukkah. And you think the opposite, right? Machot Beit David should be the strongest Machot there is. Like, dafka, that should be called the house. He's like, no, that won't make sense. It should be called a sukkah. And he explains why. He says, Defisha Machot Beit David, hu Machot Eloki. Lo kamo shaha Machot shehu b'chon. He explains, no, you've completely mistaken. If you think Machot Beit David should be a house, you're wrong. He says, why? Because every other kingdom, like, they don't have any sanctity in them. They're just like regular kingdom. Yeah, there you can call them a house. They're permanent. He says, but no, Machot Beit David is completely, completely different. He says, Machot Beit David is divine. And if it's divine, what does he say? Lefichach lo karu oto bayit shehu binyan kavua. He says, you can't call it a house, which is something permanent. And everyone's like, well, what? Like, of course you can call it a house. Like, it should be because it's divine, you can call it a house. That should be the symbol of permanence in the world. He says, why can't you call it a house? He says, because hadvarim hativim shehem ba'olam kfuim. He says, natural things in the world, that's what we see are permanent, but aval hadvarim ha'elokim einam ba'olam hazeh kfuim. He says, if you look around you, all the spiritual things, all the divine things, he says, in this world, they're not permanent. They're the temporary things. He said, rak hem arai kamo hasukkah shehi arai, just like the sukkah that we sit in on Sukkot, right? Is it supposed to be a temporary dwelling? Why? Because it's God commands us, so it should be a temporary thing, because all godly things should be temporary in this world, which hints to the fact that their real permanence is in like the world of truth. It says, that's like Machot Beit David. If Machot Beit David was like any other kingdom, then yeah, it should be called a house, because it's permanent now. He says, no, Machot Beit David is different. It's a sukkah, because a sukkah shows you that in this world it's temporary. But it hints to the fact that in actuality, it's more permanent than anything else in this world. So that's the first idea of the Maharal. Okay? It's a whole idea of being free from physicality. Right? If you're free from physicality, then you can reach upwards to reach spirituality. That's the whole idea of Machot Beit David, that you can free yourself from, like, the sukkah also. You go out and you sit in the sukkah on sukkah, and you're like, what am I doing here? Like, there's rain, especially this sukkah, right? There was, like, rain coming through the sukkah, and, like, you're like, there's probably in Israel, there's cats coming through also. And it's like, why am I in a sukkah? Like, you look around, you're like, no, really, like, this is why I'm in a sukkah. I don't need the physical comforts anymore. Because, like, how do I reach spirituality? Because, like, I can reach above physicality. So this is also why on Sukkot we say it, because on Sukkot we have this aspiration to reach above physicality. So there's also the time we mention Machot Beit David as a sukkah also. Because we want Machot Beit David, which hints to a higher spirituality. So that's the first idea of the Maharal. The second idea, he says, There's another difference between a house and a sukkah. What's the difference? He says, Habayit kasher nofel, ne'batel yino harishon shahayalo. He says, when a house falls down, like three little pigs, you know, a house falls down, he's like, if you want to rebuild it, it's a completely different thing. It's not like the original house you had. He says, im chazel, if not, hubayit chadash, it's a completely different thing. You can't pull a house that's fallen down, you can't just like rebuild it. I mean, people talk about rebuilding houses, but it's not the same thing. It's a completely different structure. He says, but no. But look at the second line down. He says, Aval ha-sukkah, she'eno bayit shehu binyan gamov ha-kavo. If you take a sukkah, it's not a completely fixed, permanent thing. Uvakalut to chazer ma'amido. If it falls down, easily you just pop it back up again. Like, if there's a storm and your sukkah falls down, it's like, it might take more than 2 minutes, but like you can pop up your sukkah and it's exactly the same as it was. And he says, if a sukkah falls, you can put it up again. If a house falls, that's the end of the house. He says, but a sukkah is different. If a sukkah falls, it just comes back up. It's easy. And not only that, but when you put it back up, it's exactly the same as it was before it fell down. And that's exactly the point with Malchut Beit David. And also with Am Yisrael in general. It shows like the resilience of Am Yisrael, that no matter what, we might fall, or we might be caused to fall by other nations, but we always come back up. And we don't change, like, but in our very essence, we're still Am Yisrael. We still come back. We're still the same Am Yisrael. So the same with Malchut Beit David. Malchut Beit David might have had this hiatus in the middle where we don't actually have Malchut Beit David. But the second it's restored, it's exactly the same in its glorious state as it was when David HaMelech was king. It's exactly the same Malchut Beit David. And it says, and even when it's fallen, it's still called a sukkah. And even when it's fallen, it's still called Malchut Beit David. So there are the two ideas in the Maharal on why we talk about a sukkah in terms of Malchut Beit David, which makes sense why we should mention Malchut Beit David on Sukkot, because it reminds us of these two ideas. First of all, like moving away from physicality, that isn't real truth in this world. And secondly, of our resilience as Am Yisrael and our hopes that just as we can build up our sukkah every year, put it down, put it up again, put it down, put it up again. Like just so, Malchut Beit David, can that easily be just restored like that? And it's exactly the same as it was. Okay, so that's Harachaman Huyakranani Watsukka David Hanofada. Let's move on to the second thing that we're going to discuss, which is we ask God that we should merit to sit in the sukkah of the skin of the Leviathan, which is a little bit odd. Right, let's be honest. Because who knows Halakhat of Sukkah? Anyone in Halakhat of Sukkah? What do the walls have to be made of? Anyone else? So it can't be quite anything. It has to have been something that grows, that had grown in the ground, and now it's not attached to the ground anymore. Which is why a lot of the time you'll see in the canvas sukkahs, you'll see like they take twine and they pull it down. They make like three things around, right? There's like, what do they call them? Yeah. Right, they make three things like a few tefachim away from each other, and if they do it to a certain height, that makes a halachic wall. So you might not necessarily see it if you're sitting in a sukkah, but if you look low, you'll see like there's things going, there's a like natural twine going around to make the wall. So that means a Leviathan isn't actually a kosher sukkah. So why on earth would we ask God that we should sit in a sukkah with a Leviathan, because it's not a kosher sukkah? It's a bit weird. And a Leviathan, like, it's a bit weird in general. Like, why when we're leaving the sukkah are we asking to sit in a sukkah of a big gigantic sea monster? Right, like, it's just a bit odd. Okay, so let's go back to Tanakh. Okay, which biblical character sat in a sukkah? Yonah, exactly, perfect, Yonah. Now, what's weird about Yonah and his sukkah? If you flip over the page, Yonah Perek Dalad, what does Yonah do? This is, like, really odd. He comes out, he's been to Nineveh, and what does he do? He leaves, he goes out into the desert, he's a little bit annoyed. He says, Yetzeh Yonah Minah'eh. Yonah comes out from Nineveh, Mikedam Ne'eh comes out from the east of the city, Ve'yaslo Shem Sukkah. What does he do? He makes for himself a sukkah. Fantastic. What, he sitts under it, Yeshev Tachteha, Bitzel. In the shade, he sat under this wonderful sukkah in the shade. See, he's going to wait out in the sukkah to see what God is going to do in Nineveh. But he's just sitting there in the sukkah, chilling out in the sukkah, get in the shade. Then what happens next? Pasuk Vav. All of a sudden, what does God cause to grow? The Kikayon, right? Why does he cause the kikayon? Liot sel al roshah. To be what? shade on his head. But wait, he just built a sukkah so we could have shade. Why is he now building a kikayon so we could have shade? He already had a sukkah. Why? And then he says, "La'tzilo moratah," like to save him from his, like, the bad things that were going on. But yismach Yonah ala kikayon simcha gedola. And Yonah was so fantastically happy with this kikayon. Right, what on earth is going on? If Yonah built himself a sukkah so he could have shade, why does he need the kikayon? And once the kikayon comes, what is it that caused him such great simcha that he's so fantastically happy about the kikayon? And, like, what happened to the sukkah? Like, it's such an odd situation. All right, so the kikayon. Who's good at maths? All right, gematria of kikayon. Let's go. Come on, let's go. Kikayon, kuf. 100. Yud. 200. 20.
26.
276. Fantastic. 276. Kikayon, the gematria is 276. Now, I'm not going to say ask you what else has a gematria of 276, because we might be here one night, and I wouldn't have a clue. Okay, so gematria of 276. Now, the other word that has a gematria of 276 is the word for skin, which is? Or with an iron, exactly. Or with an iron also has a gematria of 276. So, when he sat under the kikayon, what did it remind him of? You're like, skin, like, fantastic. Why was he so happy? He sat under, like, skin. The bit on. Right, what did it remind him of the kikayon? It reminded him, it was basically symbolic of the skin of the Leviathan, right? Which is what we ask for on Sukkot, that we should merit to sit under the skin of the Leviathan. That kikayon reminded him, or was in some sense for him, the skin of the Leviathan. And it caused him great simcha because, as we'll see, he realized that he was sat in, like, the world of truth. And we're going to get to what that means. Okay? But first of all, where on earth does this whole idea come from that we're anyway going to sit in a sukkah of a Leviathan? Like, it's a bit random to all of a sudden, like, come from nowhere. So it's actually based on a Gemara. The Gemara in Bava Batra Ayin Hei, it's the second source down on the second side. It says, V'amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, what's going to happen in the future? Atid HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'asot sukkah le'tzadikim me'orosh ha'Leviathan. It says, what's going to happen in the future? God is going to make a sukkah for tzadikim out of the skin of the Leviathan. Okay, a little bit odd. Well, what on earth has the Leviathan got to do with a sukkah? And what's it got to do with tzaddikim? And what on earth, like, what on earth is going on? So let's go back. What on earth is Leviathan? To understand about the Leviathan, we have to go back to Gan Eden. Okay, Gan Eden, before the sin of Adam HaRishon, what was special about life? I mean, I guess a lot was quite special because they were in Gan Eden. But what was special about life? Right, there was no death.
The animals were living in harmony.
Right.
No pain.
Right.
Vegetarianism.
Right. All true. Okay, what was cool about life in Gan Eden?
They didn't have to wear clothes.
Exactly. Why did they not have to wear clothes?
Because they had no Yetzirah.
Meaning that everything physical, like when they saw physical things, what was it for them? Exactly. It was a completely spiritual experience. When they saw someone without clothes, it wasn't like they had any, like, it didn't have any negative connotations. It wasn't like, it didn't start off any, like, thoughts or emotions or anything. It was just like, oh, like, that's your body, we use it to serve God. Like, that's just the way things are. Everything physical is used for spiritual. Like, there was no difference between the two. There was this fantastic fusion of physicality and spirituality, which is why there was no death. Like, if everything's together as one, you don't need to, like, what's the point in dying? There's no point to it. Which is also why in Bereshit Peret Bet it says they wore no clothes, and, like, they weren't ashamed. Like, it had no, it didn't have any connotations for them like we have today. It was completely normal because everything physical was used for spiritual things. That was life in Gan Eden before the sin. What happened after the sin? All of a sudden, the second Chava and Adam and Chava both eat from the tree. What happens? The very next passage. If you look in the next box, Paragimel, Pasuk Vav, they eat from the tree. What happens in Pasuk Zion straight away? Vetivkachna ineshnehem, the eyes were open. Viaduki erumimhem, they saw they, like, weren't wearing anything. And what, all of a sudden, what do they have to do? Exactly, they have to make clothes, they have to cover themselves. They're like, what are we doing? We're walking around with no clothes. This is ridiculous, we can't do this. So they get the leaves and they stop making clothes for themselves. Like, that was the switch that happened because of the sin in Gan Eden. all of a sudden, what happened before, there was this beautiful fusion that everything physical was used for spiritual things. It was fantastic. The second they ate from the tree, physicality came here, spirituality was here, and they weren't together anymore. Physicality now had negative connotations. They weren't. It wasn't automatically used for spiritual things. Which is why also what was another consequence of eating from the Eitz HaDaat was all of a sudden there was death, right? Because if physicality isn't used for spiritual things, then there's a need for death in there. So what's our goal? Our goal is to get back to that point pre-sin in Gan Eden where we have this fusion of physicality and spirituality, right? That's the goal. So what on earth has this got to do with a Leviathan? All right, fish. What do we know about fish? They swim. They swim. Fantastic. What else? What do I have? Right, Noah and Hara. What else? Right, they have lots of children. They breed like tons. What else? What did you say? That's true. Most animals do, though. What did you say?
It didn't go on the table.
Right. What else? Good observation. Okay, when do we eat fish? And when else? Bas ava dagim v'chol matamim. When do we sing that? Right, there's a whole idea of having fish on Shabbat, including fish and a meal on Shabbat. Why? What's the gematria of, I'm sorry, I'm doing lots of gematrias tonight. What's the gematria of dagim?
Seven.
What's seven the magic number of?
Shabbat.
Which is the magic number of? Seven. Well, like it's like just the, it is, but it's like the spirituality involved in, right? It's like 6 days is complete nature, and then it's like seven is the one step above the spirituality. So we see in all this, here's another one. This is the last game actually for the night. Where do fish swim? Okay, in water. Now, what's the Hebrew word for water?
Nile.
Okay, now, there's an idea, I'm not sure where this starts from, but there's an idea called a hidden gematria, right? Have you heard about this before? No. Did someone ask you it tonight? Okay, fine.
I've heard about this.
Okay, so what the idea is if you take, we imagine the word mayim, and you spell out the letters involved. So mem is mem, right? Yud is yud vav dalet. And then final mem is mem again, because it's mem. Everyone get that? Should I give that again?
Yeah.
Right, so like, you have the word mayim, and you take each letter and you spell out each letter. So the first letter is mem. How do you spell mem in Hebrew? It's mem. Right, you take the letter yud, and you spell out yud, vav, dalet, and then you take final mem, and it's the same again. So, what's cool about the word mayim is that the hidden gematria is the same as its revealed gematria. Does that make sense? As in mem, yud, mem of mayim is 90, right? Mem is 40, yud is 10, mem is 40. 40, 40, 10 is 90. And if you take the hidden gematria, which is mem, vav, dalad, mem, it's also 90. Right, because this whole idea of fish and water of being spiritual creatures, right? Also, what's also special about fish? How do fish differ from every other animal? Well, not every other animal. How do you kill an animal normally if you want to eat it? How do you kill a fish? Yeah, exactly. Right, I once heard a story of someone who was like coming back from the shuk, and like the woman next to them had like a bag of fish and it was like jumping around because like it still wasn't just like bang it, because like that's how you do with fish. Like you don't need proper shkita, you just like hit it on the head and like. I don't know, it's 12:30. Right, so this is the whole idea of fish. On the one hand, most of the things we just mentioned, on the one hand, make fish very spiritual creatures. Okay? On the other hand, mentioned over here, that they also breed like crazy. Right? Fish have tons of baby fish. There's like a proper word for that. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. What? Ah, there you go. Right, so they have tons. Right, that's just what fish do. So on the one hand, they're totally spiritual, but on the other hand, they're also very physical. Right, because that is like the taiva involved is a very physical thing. So if you take the Leviathan, which is the biggest fish, on the one hand, it should be the most spiritual creature, but on the other hand, is also the most physical creature. Also, thinking about it, the Leviathan has a very, very thick skin. because it's a huge sea monster. It has very thick skin. Now, what did God make Adam and Chava at the end of the whole episode in Gan Eden? Right, ketonet or. He made them clothes of skin, right, of or. Because or represents physicality. That was what happened. After they ate from the Eitz HaDaat, this whole idea of physicality came into play. And then the Leviathan also has this big, thick skin because skin represents physicality. So on the one hand, the Leviathan is very spiritual. On the other hand, it's very physical. Now, last idea, the Leviathan, what's the root of the word Leviathan? I'll give you a clue. It begins with the Lamas. Right, Levaya. What's a Levaya? A funeral. Why is it called a Levaya? Because what do you do at a funeral? You escort the body. Right, that's what I did at a funeral, is like you escort them to the final resting place. So that's Levaya. Like, if you want to milaver someone, you want to escort them out. Right, if someone comes to your home, you escort them out a certain way to part of Achnasat Ochim. So the Leviathan, the root of the word Leviathan is to escort. What happens when you escort someone? You join together. You're going towards the same place, but you join together. And that's what the Leviathan does. It takes physicality, it takes spirituality, and it joins them together. That is what the Leviathan symbolizes. Everyone got that? Yeah? Woohoo. I know it's late, so I just want to check. Okay, so the Leviathan is this idea of hidden spirituality in the world, right? It's physical and it's spiritual, and somehow it manages to fuse them both together, and that is what the Leviathan symbolizes. So, what meaning that the Leviathan, for us, symbolizes that ideal situation in Gan Eden we wanted to go back to, right? Because pre-Chet Eitz HaDaat, we were in this situation where we had physicality, we had spirituality, and everything just worked towards one goal, towards God. And then after the sin, they split again. Our goal is to get them back together, and that's what the Leviathan symbolizes, that fusion of physicality and spirituality. That's the Leviathan. All right, now, how does this tie in? So if you look at the next source, it's the Shaarei Lashem, who was written by Rav Shlomo Eliashiv, who is the grandfather of the Rav Eliashiv, who passed away a couple of years ago. So he talks about it. He says, what on earth, like, he talks about this whole idea of a Leviathan. And he says, what are we trying to do? He says, our goal is to get rid of the problem that started with the Chet in Gan Eden. We have to get rid of that blemish that entered us that made physicality such a bad thing and stopped us using it towards spirituality. So what's the whole idea? He says you take the ketunot or with an iron, right? You take the skins, the clothes of skin that God made for Adam and Chava, which is spelt with an iron, and you've got to turn the iron into which letter? An aleph. What does aleph or with an aleph mean? Exactly. He said that's the whole point. The whole point is taking physicality, which is symbolized by skin, and turning it into light. Meaning, that is exactly what Yonah experienced under the Kikayon. That's why he felt this tremendous simcha, because he was sat under this Kikayon. It reminded him of the skin of the Leviathan, and he was filled with this tremendous simcha, because that's what our challenge is. If we manage to use physicality, raise it to the level of spirituality, we turn the iron of physicality into the aleph of awe of light, and we reveal the hidden light in the world. Right? Physicality has no meaning unless you raise it to the level of spirituality. And that's what we're trying to do. We're turning the iron into the aleph. Right? We want to turn this world we're in into the permanent world, into the world where we can actually experience spirituality and experience God by raising physicality. So that's what we're supposed to be doing. Okay, so why are we sitting in a sukkah of the skin of the Leviathan? Again, because we go back to the Maharal. What does the Maharal say about the sukkah? Maharal says about the sukkah, this is how we experience true spirituality. It's realizing that things in this world aren't, like the true things aren't permanent in this world. We have to get to them to become permanent. We have to turn the physicality into the spirituality. It's like, that's what we've got to do. Now the beautiful, I want to finish with this really beautiful Cheshek Shlomo. Now the Cheshek Shlomo, it's a bit hard to say, was written by Rav Shlomo HaKohen, who was the Av Beit Din and Posek of Vilna back in the late 19th century. Okay, so what does he say? He says, if you look through the entire Tanakh, Every time you see the word sukkah, which letter is it missing? The vav. He's like, why is it missing a vav? He says, because it hints to the fact that in this world, Hashem isn't complete. Hashem isn't complete, he says, until... He says, Eimatai yesu ko b'shlimut. So when will it come into perfection? When will we put the vav back into the word of sukkah? He says, Bizman shia ma'unato b'tzion, the time when God dwells in Sion. He says, and then... Yeah, Hashem Shalem, God will be complete. Vahikiseh Shalem, His throne will be complete. Vahashem Yifros Aleinu Sukkot Shlomo B'mhera V'nizkeh Leisha B'sukkah Shalev Yatan. That point when God is dwelling in Sion, He'll spread the sukkah of peace over us. Right? That's what we say in the Brachot before Kriyat Shema, right? Marriage. That we should have Paras Aleinu Sukkot Shlomecha. That God should spread over us the sukkah of peace. Right, all ties back into the idea of sukkah and God becoming shalem. When God completes again, when he's in Sion. So I missed out a part, what's the connection with Sion and Yerushalayim? I actually missed out part of the Gemara before, semi on purpose, so if any of you read it, you'll know what's coming next. Now what happens, if you go back to the Gemara, he says, God is taking this Leviathan, he slaughters the Leviathan, he saves it for tzaddikim, makes a sukkah of the skin. He feeds, the earlier Gemara says he gives them, he cooks them the meat, the tzaddikim will eat the meat. The skin is used as a sukkah. And then the Gemara continues, he says, Vahasha, what does he do with the rest of the skin? This Leviathan is huge. He's like, what are we going to do with the rest of the skin? What does God do with it? He says, Torso HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Chomot Yerushalayim. God is going to spread the rest of the skin over the walls of Yerushalayim. Vizivo Mavhik Misof HaOlam V'Ad Sofa. God's light is going to shine out from one end of the world to the other through this Leviathan. Why? Because what's Yerushalayim all about? Yerushalayim is the perfect fusion of physicality and spirituality. Think about it. What do we want to see about? We want to see the Beit HaMikdash. What was the Beit HaMikdash all about? Using the physical to get to the spiritual. The whole avoda in the Beit HaMikdash. Right? It was, if you take out the spirituality part, what are you doing? You're just killing animals and sprinkling stuff on this bear and this and that. It's got no meaning. The whole idea is you're raising the physical to the spiritual. That's also the idea of Malchut Beit David. It's a physical entity, but it's for a spiritual purpose. So that's why the rest of Leviathan is used of Yerushalayim, because that's where the perfect place for this fusion to happen. So, we'll finish off that. It really doesn't happen by itself, and it's our job and mission to really raise physicality to the level of spirituality. We have to take the message of the Leviathan to fuse physicality and spirituality back together, turn the or with an iron into or with an aleph, and really reveal God's glory in the world through this fusion. And then we will then merit the restoration of Malchut Beit David, like the sukkah will restore itself, and then God's glory will be complete again in the world. So we should. Shenizkeh, leshevet b'sukkah shel Leviathan.